Coming up next on Tech News Today, we've got a new show from a new studio, the Eastside Studios. We're all moved in. We're going to have a lot of fun today. We're talking Android 7, a.k.a. Nougat, is here. You got it yet? Also, Apple's acquisition of Glimpse is going to be good for portability of health records. The Emotive is actually a device that converts your brainwaves into controls for many things, including BB-8, and a cell phone that puts itself together. Robots are worried about losing their jobs for a change. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1582, recorded Monday, August 22nd, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action.
And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything new in technology that happened today.
Everything that happened, period. Including everything that we're surrounded by.
Yes,
right, we are
in our new studio. This isn't exactly, we haven't put everything exactly where we want it yet. We might move it. I might sit in the corner and say, no, I want that there, and I want that there, and I want that there. And someone will do that for me, probably me. But we're almost there. I'm Megan Maroney. Did I already say that?
No, we didn't, but that's okay. I'm Jason Howell. And yeah, I think probably it's going to be that wall at some point that we're going to be up against, the wall you can't see, that one over there that you can't see.
Yeah, that one.
Just envision a wall right there. And most of you are just listening to this anyway, so you're like, what are you even talking about? Might sound a little strange right now. We've got things that are in the works throughout the course of the week. All the stuff from the Brick House going to be moved over here, dialed in. Things are going to sound, look great. You won't even know anything changed.
Mm-hmm. And if you are listening, I just want to say everything's perfect. Everything's perfect, and I
nothing happened
again.
Nothing's different this time around. Let's get started with some news. That certainly hasn't changed, that there is news to talk about. There were rumors pointing to a release of Android 7, Nougat, or Nougat, today, and those rumors, at least this time, were true. Don't you love it when that works? The latest major version of Android begins the process rolling out to many supported Google Nexus devices today. Users who are already enrolled in the dev preview, the developer preview, like myself, were able to immediately update this morning. Not all Nexus devices are eligible, though. Factory images and over-the-air updates are rolling out for the Nexus 5X, the 6P, the 6, the 9, the Player, and the Pixel C. So starting to get, you know, the official Nougat train has left the building. Still no word on the next crop of Nexus devices. That's HTC's Sailfish and Marlin. In past, the new version of Android has been kind of tied to those new devices releasing. So it's kind of a different year this time around.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leo installed it right before iOS today. It looked pretty. There was circles and magic happening. And then he got it and was very excited. What about your Samsung phone, your Galaxy phone? Will that come anytime soon or?
Don't know. I mean, I think at this point we don't really know of the manufacturers, you know, what their update schedules are. We know that, you know, some of them are better at this than others. Yes, the Samsung Galaxy, I can pretty much say safely that yes, the Galaxy S7 line of Samsung devices will get the update. You just don't know when. You don't know if Samsung's going to be on the ball. And that kind of goes for all, you know, all manufacturers. And that's just a big source of frustration for everyone, right? Is that, okay, great, Nougat exists and it's rolling out, but there's such a small percentage of people that have Nexus devices. And everyone else, they're behind these barriers, these walls that prevent them from getting updates until both the carrier and the manufacturer kind of get their heads together and actually do the work to push it out. And that could take months, if at all, depending on what device you have.
So there's some multitasking, take advantage of the big screen. I read Ron Amadio's review on that and said, you know, he said it works okay. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes he was just tasking on one side and there was a screenshot of the app on the other. There's new emoji, but not all the new emoji, like the promised new emoji where, you know, the female emojis aren't just doing their nails. They're also right. running and doing, you know,
all sorts
of surgery.
Yeah. I mean, underneath there's a lot of actually really great features that it's easy to kind of not notice at first. One thing that's really cool is seamless automatic, system updates, which Chrome OS has a really great kind of update methodology. You don't even know that an update has basically downloaded and prepared itself. You just see this little icon down the bottom that says, oh, I click to restart. And when you restart, that update is just folded in and you're not down any time. More or less, Android kind of has this baked in. So if you buy a device with Nougat pre-installed on it, you're going to see the benefit of that and your updates are going to be very seamless. You got the notification improvements, things like bundled notifications altogether, things like power user controls over how you get notified on what, inline reply, battery tweaks with Doze, which... You know, prior with Marshmallow, Doze was really isolated to when you set your phone on a table and it's inactive, then it kind of ramps down how it manages the system underneath. Now it's really when your screen is off, it's doing a lot of those same improvements. And then, of course, VR baked into the OS, which I don't know what a big deal Daydream is going to be, but that's there. And like you said, multitasking, which is actually really cool. There's a really easy way to double tap the multitasking button and it'll switch between the two most previous apps that you've been using. So if you've, you know, got information in one app and you want to port it over to the other one, instead of having to kind of jump through hurdles, you just kind of double tap and jump right to it.
I think you left out the most important part, which there's an Easter egg that lets you give treats to a virtual cat.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of setting up. I played with it a little bit. So basically what it is, you have to, you know, you go through your standard. With Android, there's always an Easter egg. If you go into the settings and you go to the version number and then, you know, it pulls up like the graphic in this case is the big N. And I think it's if you double tap it three times and then hold, then you get this little cat button down at the bottom or cat notification down at the bottom. That activates kitty or cat mode or something. You have to go into your settings and actually add a quick setting in there, a little button for feeding or for putting out a dish of food for a cat. And then as you're using your phone, if you put out the right snack or the right treat for a cat, eventually they come along and they eat the snack. And then it's like you've logged. It's almost like Pokemon. It's like you log that you got that particular cat and you can name it. And it's silly, but it's there.
Virtual cats are great for us on Tech News Today because part of the requirement of being a host of Tech News Today is that you are allergic to cats. That's and we are. That's why we got this job. So yeah. We like virtual cats.
Virtual cats don't make me sneeze, and for that, I'm very thankful.
Well, there is HealthKit, CareKit, ResearchKit, but today Fast Company reports that Apple has acquired Glimpse. That's Glimpse with two I's, no Y. It's a health data company that compiles all of your personal medical information into a tidy, shareable package that Glimpse claims is secure. Now, Glimpse was started by Anil Sethi. He was an Apple systems engineer from back in the 80s. He has had other startups that have been purchased by WebMD and others. So, yeah, this is just Apple getting into the health, getting deeper into the health field. I mean, I think this is something that we really need. You know, we need to be able to easily share our information, our health information. It keeps us healthier. And we need to do it securely because we don't want that information just to go out. So the idea with Glimpse is that you can share it. We can give people a glimpse of it. You know, you can decide who you're going to give a glimpse to your health information and for how long, not just out there on the cloud for anyone to access it and then, you know, go all Minority Report on you with it.
Right. Yeah. All about portability. And, you know, we've made a lot of advancements with technology over the years, but it really seems like kind of healthcare documentation and stuff, it gets siloed in this place, you know, this doctor's office that you went to, and for you to have access to that or for it to be easily accessible by other places becomes a challenge, right? You were saying HealthKit, iOS 10 with HealthKit installed, that actually right there already allows you to request a medical record if your doctor has digitized them. So this seems like a perfect fit for that. It's, you know, docs, photos, journal entries, all that kind of stuff. You can export all of that information into a single file. And it pulls in patient information from more than 1,500 health centers, pharmacies, labs, if you've given approval as a patient for it to do that. And so it seems like a really great way to kind of make that information portable and usable so that when you're done at a, you know, done at a particular doctor's office or whatever the case may be, that information comes with you and it's not just stuck in the system somewhere, mm-hmm. which I feel is like is totally the case with me.
Yeah.
You know, well, I'm always starting from square one to explain my history to the next person.
I mean, there's so much information. It used to be that doctors just had to just go from what's in their brain, maybe ask some other doctors around them, you know. But now we have so much information. And if we can just get it together in some way that can be easily shareable, I mean, you know, just having just, you know, I go to Kaiser and just having the record of symptoms or things I've complained about or, you know, things that my kids have complained about over, you know, just for it's been, I don't know, like almost a decade. 10 years since I've had that information. It's just nice and easy to be able to say, oh yeah, you also complained about that, you know, in January 2006 right. or something like that.
For sure.
So yeah, it's great, but it makes people nervous to know that it's out there. And, you know, we have a lot of laws around keeping it, you know, protected. And we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. The health industry isn't really excited about, you know, sharing all this stuff or, you know, a lot of their systems are old and not so secure. So, yeah, this who knows what it will become, but something.
Yeah, I mean, the old system aspect is what will be a challenge for this, right? Because, I mean, this only really works if the doctors have gone through the process of digitizing all that information and kind of stepping into the next phase of where they're at. And by the way, Apple did a really great job of keeping a lid on this because this happened months ago, and no one was the wiser until Fast Company kind of discovered this.
Right. They haven't commented on it for sure yet,
right.
So we don't know. But yeah, that's sort of their way. Like they don't, you know, they don't really announce things like yeah. this too much.
Netgear is introducing a new multi-unit router called the Orbi to help tackle the problem of weak Wi-Fi throughout the home. The company calls it a Wi-Fi system and not just a router because of the inclusion of everything you need to extend Wi-Fi along with software to make it all work. There are two units in total. One's a primary router for plugging the modem into and another that you put elsewhere in your home. Supposedly, it's capable of 4,000 square feet of coverage. Netgear hopes that the units are attractive enough that you'll want to position them prominently throughout your home so you get the best kind of connectivity throughout. I feel like technology right now as a quote attractive home appliance is kind of a thing, right? Echo, Google Home, although it's not a product yet, you know, they've kind of tried to make that look like an air freshener. Orbi, you know, these are like tech products normally are hidden behind this ugly, you know, usually black or gray casing, and now they're starting to make it so that you want to show everyone.
Well, I mean, that's better, right? For for routers or for something that you're talking to, like it needs to be out in the, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the thing. We hide our routers, we put them in closets, you know, we put them up on shelves, and then we don't get the access that we need. So, mm-hmm. You know, this is along the lines of Eero, which is a Twit sponsor. They sponsored mm-hmm. iOS Today. Eero's are a little smaller. These are bigger, but they both look nice. It's true. Like it's not something I would mind, you know, having in my living room. $500 is a lot of money.
Well, I saw the two packs selling for $399.
Okay, $400.
Which would be $400. But when you break it down, I mean, I think what they were saying is, yes, that's a little bit more expensive, but everybody's an upgrade at this point. Everybody has some sort of solution in their home, and it's probably sub-$100, mm-hmm. and it's not working at all.
Right.
And so in order to actually do this, yes, it's an increase in price, but it kind of validates itself based on that.
Yeah,
you know, because you're not going to buy another sub $100 device and then expect it to work any better.
Right.
Netgear claims that that's just not the way to go.
Yeah, I mean,
of course they want to sell these, so there you go.
Right. I mean, I consider myself a relatively you know, technical person, and I have a small house. I have 1,200 square foot house. It's not giant. This is supposed to cover like a 4,000 square foot house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 4,000 square feet. But I don't get access everywhere, and you know, with the Amazon Echo and the Echo Dot, I need it. I hate when it, you know, doesn't have access. I got the Netgear AC1200 desktop Wi-Fi range extender. Paid $86 for it.
Sub-$100. That's that's just.
Is that the sub-$100? Yeah, $86.
Yeah,
it doesn't work.
It falls into the Netgear kind
right.
of
so, like,
philosophy
do I,
here.
Yeah, and it's sitting there. Like I, you know, finally got a chance to set it up, and I couldn't set it up, and And, you know, I couldn't return it to Amazon at that point because it was too long before. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's $86 that I burned, essentially.
And it's just not working.
Right. And, yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, it's just like I try to get it to work and then it doesn't. You know, it's just like I just don't have the time to really devote to my own home network, which is sad. Like the, you know, cobbler's children have no shoes situation. But so I don't know, maybe $400, if it worked, would be worth it.
I mean, we all rely on Wi-Fi these days so much in our home, and it's not just tech enthusiasts anymore. That's, and I think that's probably key of this whole category of devices, is that in order to do this prior to these kind of appliance methods of doing it, you kind of had to know what you were doing, and you had to know the terminology and the thing to pick up to extend, you know, the Wi-Fi extender that goes with the router that you already have, and the, and all that kind of stuff. And I think at that point, you know, normal people's eyes just kind of glaze over. My eyes glaze over. I never did it because I just didn't want to go, you know, go through it and then realize I didn't know enough to make it effective, you know. And something like this, it's all contained in, so I think it's a good category. Just a little expensive.
Yes. Well, Fusion reports that a 20-year-old Pakistani technologist has created art directly from his brain using an $800 headset and an algorithm. The Emotive is a brain wearable that offers access to advanced brain monitoring and cognitive assessment technologies. Asad Malik used all the raw data coming from his Emotive. He translated it into visual representations using an algorithm where particular colors and patterns represent different emotions and patterns of thought. So there's, if you're watching the video, you can see some of the art now. That is him sleeping, I think. The yellow one, I think, is described as...
sitting on our A double dollar sciences.
So that's what it's like. So the Emotive is designed to... I set you up for that one, sorry. The Emotive is designed to monitor stress, allow you to track your ability to focus, and quantify other brain functions. So it's kind of like a Fitbit for our noggins. Do you want one?
I would love to have one. This thing is super cool. So the Epic headset, like you said, records brainwaves, translates that into functional data. It's an EEG, sends that information wirelessly to a computer for all the analysis and everything, shows you kind of the dynamics of brain activity in real time. And because it's learning patterns of your brainwaves, it allows, and this is outside of the art aspect. The art aspect is pretty cool, but it allows you to do things like they show an example of a guy who's wearing the headset, and on the screen, on the computer screen, is an image of a flower. And I can't remember exactly the process of the flower opening and closing, but basically they're able to analyze his brain function to the sense to where from that point on he can figure out how to think about it properly, and just thinking about it in that right sort of way is enough to activate the flower opening. And it takes him a while. I mean, it's basically, you know, this is telepathy to a certain degree. It's technology enabled telepathy. But I mean, you're literally, your brain is a control method. And that's so cool. I love it.
So there's two Emotives. The Epic Plus is a high-resolution 14-channel mobile EEG used for contextualized scientific research-grade results. And the Emotive Insight, which is a prosumer 5-channel mobile EEG used by engaged individuals seeking better understanding of their brains and mental state. So that's the $300 one. Uh-huh. $299. So cheaper than the last thing that was going to give me a Wi-Fi.
Do you want Wi-Fi in your home?
Yeah.
Or do you want to put this
or do you want to control things with your brain?
I mean, you know, for the average person, is it easy to justify one of these things? Hell no. Like, I don't know what I'd do with it. It's cool. I don't know what I'd do with it.
Well, you'd have less stress, so that'd be good, right?
I'm not stressed. Look, Megan, I am not stressed. Okay, I could probably use one of those.
Well, you can move BB-8 with your mind. I didn't watch that video, but
it's pretty cool. I think you have to skip about halfway through it in order to see it. But yes, there is a little BB-8, toy that moves around. That, you know, he's wearing the Emotive, and he can kind of push it along. There's all the code, I think, that goes into it. But eventually, he's able to use his mind to move the BB-8.
I guess we're gonna have to trust him, though. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's true. We don't actually know. I guess.
Right,
see, he's even putting his hand up like a Jedi and making the BB-8 roll across. I believe it. Looks real to me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know. I believe it based on the video that I saw prior on the originating article that really kind of showed the cool kind of concept and, mm-hmm. and you know, proof of concept behind this stuff.
You might already know this, but the CEO of Emotive says that myth that we only use 10% of our brains, uh-huh. that's not true. We use a lot more.
Mm. Does he know how much I'm...
She?
Or is she? Does she know how much?
No. Maybe she does, but... Yeah. More than 10%.
Okay, 11% then.
I mean, right now I feel like I'm using about 3%, but I'm tired.
Yeah, that's true. It's Monday. It's like 2% Monday. Samsung is doing a bang-up job when it comes to its approach on premium smartphones. The Galaxy S7 series, including the recently released Note 7, all show that Samsung knows how to make a premium device and, more importantly, get customers to pay premium prices for them. The company is looking to take its progress in premium and extend it to lower price points by selling refurbished used versions of its flagships. This is not confirmed by Samsung at this point, but those in the know apparently know that Samsung is working on this. Users who sign up for the one-year upgrade programs would basically be providing the stock so that, you know, they could buy them, essentially sell those refurbished old and gently used devices to people who are interested in paying a little bit less, but still get a, you know, last year's premium model, essentially.
Yeah, I like that idea. Reuse, recycle.
Apple, and I mean, Apple's doing this right now, right? Like, mm-hmm. they've got a program. Apple resale comes in around 69% of the original cost 1 year after launch. In the used sales kind of market right now, Samsung flagships generally sell for around 51% of the original price in the U.S. a year after launch. So definitely lower than Apple. Still decent, still a decent return there, especially if it's, you know, if they're just kind of getting these things as part of their program, and then they just receive these devices, do a little cleanup, make sure that they're good to go, and push them on out. So, a Note 7 right now selling for $864 new. If this were to happen and it was the 51% or whatever that Samsung's doing, that's $423 that they would be able to recoup, you know, and others wouldn't, I suppose, because, you know, they'd be able to get that for themselves. So I don't know how that interferes with their mid-tier devices, though. That would be a challenge. Up next, Megan had a chance to chat with Manoush Zamarodi, host of the Note to Self podcast, about a few things. But before that interview, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They are the sponsor of this episode. I've been through the mortgage process, and though I enjoy waking up in our own home, kind of the fruits of all that that labor that led up to it, digging out all that stuff was just not very fun at all. And any way that you can kind of improve that process to make it easier so you can get into your home and be happy sooner, faster, without any headache, I'm all for it. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. So if you hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork, well, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. That sounds pretty easy, right? That helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And beyond that, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. You have exactly what you need in your pocket, basically. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or to buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today. All you have to do is go to quickenloans.com/TNT. Don't forget the TNT at the end there. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
What is the secret to work-life balance for parents? Is it technology? I hope so. Joining us to help maybe answer that question is Manoush Zamarodi from the Note to Self podcast. Welcome back, Manoush.
Megan, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So last time we talked, you had the Bored and Brilliant project, which yes. was amazing. You taught people, you went through little lessons every day of ways for people to put down their smartphones and maybe come up with amazing ideas. I did the project. You replayed it this past month, I assume, in order to prepare for the project that we're going to talk about. And it was funny. I listened to it again because I needed it again.
It was a boot camp version. Like, it's hard to take a full week to do one of these interactive projects when you don't have the full week Then you can do the boot camp version. I feel like we all need the boot camp version of everything these days. And so why not do that for figuring out how to use your technology purposefully as well? So, yeah, I'm glad to hear you did it.
I did it twice. Hopefully this time it'll take. Well, let's talk about your new project, which is a 4-part series on Note to Self. As we're recording this, we're only in part 3. You left me hanging, so I don't know what happens in part 4. But it's called Taking the Lead. And it's about two women who are trying to solve the problem that so many working parents have with trying to balance their work and their life and have just be able to do the impossible, which is have a successful, busy job and also raise children. Talk a little bit about the project.
Yeah, so these are actually two moms, Brooklyn moms, and I started talking to them about 2 years ago, and they had originally started as like a think tank, you know, how can we do this? How can we deal with all these smart moms that we see in the neighborhood who drop out of work, and when they want to go back, they can't get in at the same level necessarily, and they feel like they can't rise up. Is there something we can do? Well, of course, as they're thinking about all this, the app economy is, you know, happening and taking off. And so they come up with this idea for a sort of digital service, a platform that supports parents. It went through various iterations, but the final version that they landed on was sort of like a TaskRabbit, but for a trusted network. So you would be hooked up with your friends and in your networks, babysitters and other support staff. And so, you know, if you have to stay late at the office because a client call goes long, you have a backup, as opposed to a lot of people who are truly scrambling. Sure, they're on the call with the client, but they're also crazy on their phone trying to get their babysitter to stay late or see if a friend can do it or get that other babysitter who they haven't talked to in 6 months. So the idea was to sort of create this network. And I really thought, Megan, oh, this will be interesting to see how these busy working moms become entrepreneurs. What it's like for two people who have no tech background to go to Silicon Valley, drive around Palo Alto, and really, you know, get their fingers dirty, hands dirty in this. But really, over the 2 years that I followed them, it also became much more of a deep sort of archetypal story. One of the women has a stay-at-home husband. He's the lead parent, as we now call it, and she is ready to do it like the bros do it out in San Francisco. The other, though, she is the family's main caretaker, and she feels deeply ambivalent that, of course, in startup culture, you have to be 110%. And so her kid is saying to her mom, you never want to be with me. I never see you. And she's feeling completely torn. And so we really see how the tech economy is very difficult to reconcile with some of the ambivalence, the dilemmas that professional moms face.
And some of the moments you capture, I think, are really universal for those of us. It's particular moms, I think, in this instance, because I'm talking about mom guilt, you make one point where she talks about, you know, not being able to pick up her kids from school. And there's that question of, like, do we really want to pick up our kids at school? Or do we really feel like that's our job? Right. Like, it's our responsibility. And then we feel guilty not doing it. I mean, I definitely personally went through that when I came back here, which was the full time as opposed to a freelance job I did for the decade before when my children were born. And it's like, I had to think, well, yeah, you know what? I've picked up my kids for until they were in fifth and seventh grade. And, you know, I'm good. Someone else can do it.
Right. You're in the next chapter. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting to me that, like, with so many jobs now, you know, I'm on Skype with you. Like, technology is making it possible for us to work in very different ways, to work remotely, to work flexibly. And yet, if you want to have a tech startup, there's none of that. You are all in or you're not in at all. And so it's going to be interesting, I think, as we see somebody like Mark Zuckerberg take a paternity leave, how the sort of culture potentially changes as we go forward and people make more demands and dads make more demands, right? That it's not just the mom guilt. But, you know, I see my husband who, you know, he's had to work a lot this week and he misses seeing our kids. And so when it becomes sort of more culturally acceptable that dads also have more flexibility at work and it's not assumed that it's mom who's doing the pickup all the time, then maybe we can get to this sort of equilibrium. But of course, in the tech world, you know, where only, I believe it's 6% of all app developers are women, it's a difficult nut to crack.
Yeah, I mean, the episode where they do go to Silicon Valley is fascinating, and I'm a huge fan of the HBO show Silicon Valley, and it made me think that there are so few women characters in there already, but, like, there's not a single mom in that entire show.
That's funny that you say that, because when Marissa Meyer was appointed CEO of Yahoo, I wrote an op-ed that was saying, like, oh, my gosh, what an opportunity for this woman, she's pregnant, to set an example of how it can be done, to say, potentially, I can be a CEO, but I can also create boundaries. And actually, that's not at all what she did, right? She was like, no problem. I've got the nursery next door. I've got a total staff. I'll be out for 2 days. Done. And still here we are, and the company hasn't succeeded. So I had wished that she would show that there was another way to do this, but maybe that, you know, the culture wasn't there yet. She wouldn't have been accepted.
What? Let's talk about Need Done. That's the app that they were working on. And I don't want you to give any spoilers or anything. But so they go to this app accelerator program. I keep wanting to bring up Silicon Valley, but it's kind of like the same sort of situation, except it's in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Of all places, yep.
and talk a little bit about what happened there, because it's really fascinating how they approached their final presentation.
So it's very interesting to me that all these sort of smaller former industrial cities now across the United States are taking a page out of Silicon Valley's book and starting these accelerators in the hopes of bringing more tech entrepreneurs to their, you know, really struggling economies. And so Springfield, Massachusetts has one called Valley Venture Mentors, where the idea is to incubate, mentor, and kickstart entrepreneurs who will hopefully then set up their companies in Springfield, revitalize the economy. And so these two women, you know, they couldn't find anything that worked with their schedules here in New York, ironically. So they now drive up every weekend to go to Springfield, Massachusetts, 3 hours on the train or driving, and really sort of do this boot camp of trying to learn how to become entrepreneurs. And, you know, they do what they do at every single one of these accelerator places, right? You practice your pitch. You figure out what is your valuation. What is your, what's the value that you're bringing to customers? How do you explain the pain point?
Well, it definitely is tricky. And I highly recommend that people download Taking the Lead and subscribe to the Note to Self podcast. We didn't talk about your experience with Need Done, so we'll save that for people to listen. Well, before I let you go, tell people a little bit about what Note to Self is when you're not doing four-part series like this.
Yes. Okay. So we are a podcast. We come from WNYC Studios, which is where I'm sitting right now here in New York City. It's New York Public Radio. We're a podcast. I mean, we call it a tech show, but it's really a tech show about being human. So it's about how technology is changing the way we work, the way that we meet special people in our lives, the way that we parent, the way that we sort of really construct how we use our time every single day. And so we like to have personal stories, and we like to think sort of more deeply and critically about what all this wonderful technology means for our attention spans and for our emotions.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, anyone can find Note to Self Radio. It's notetoselfradio.org or wherever fine podcasts are given away free.
iTunes, all those things. Exactly.
Thank you so much, Manoush.
Oh, Megan, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Take care. So if you are watching and not listening, you might notice that was our old studio.
I know. It made me forget that we moved. We were there again. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm not sitting at that table.
So I interviewed Manoush about 3 weeks ago. She's on the East Coast. We have a lot of like tech reporters that we always try to get that are on the East Coast and also have families. And so this time when we record is usually the time they're eating dinner, homework, doing all the things like she just described. So whenever I have the chance, I try to get them early in the morning. And I knew that we weren't going to have our big Skype machine up yet. So that's why that interview is a little old. Now you can go and get all the whole series that she did, over 2 years of research. It's great if you're interested in this topic at all. So we have been reading your emails and not just the ones you've been sending us. I'm just kidding. We're only reading the messages you've been sending us. We have not hacked into your email yet. But after the break, we will read you some of our favorites. But first, let's take a minute to thank Igloo, the sponsor of this episode. People are using 30 different cloud services to get their work done every day. Whether you're using Salesforce, Zendesk, or Google Drive, it's harder than ever to keep track of everything. Now you can easily bring your cloud-based apps together in a modern intranet with Igloo integrations. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Dropbox. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds over SSL and with 256-bit encryption. It's used by large enterprises and growing companies like User Testing, BDO, American Family Insurance, and ATP World Tour. You can try it free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. When you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. Just go to igloosoftware.com/TWIT. So now we got some feedback. Matt Schultz wrote us in response to last week's story about Verizon wanting to sell ad space on your phone. He says, would you like to make the mobile market a better place? Of course you do. So kindly fund my Kickstarter campaign. Our goal is to pay Verizon to install our cute kitten, that's cute with a K, app. Our app will, upon installation, demand food, toys, and of course belly rubs. It will then morph into a hideous monster that takes over your phone by eating all of your free space, plus taking over the notifications bar with offers from AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint. In summary, please support the Kickstarter campaign because it will make the world a better place and maybe make Verizon blush ever so slightly in their fortress made of money.
So this is a real Kickstarter campaign.
No.
Although this doesn't sound too far fetched.
Yes. Well, already, like maybe that that cat, the
I know.
Kitten.
Oh
is
no.
An ad.
This is a harbinger of something really bad on Android Nougat. Suddenly, I'm going to get ads in my notification shade. Which, by the way, I hope you never see in when we do the cross platform experiment, because that is no fun. I don't even know the last time I saw that, and I've only seen it a handful of times. But it's not fun. Thankfully, they've done a lot to protect against that. But I think that's kind of the point, right, is that like Verizon's looking for all of these different ways to make money, of course, because that's what they do. They have a business to make money. So if they can sell these, you know, these extra places on the phone that you buy from them, from advertising or whatever, I mean, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. You're just as a user, it's no fun. Alfonso responded to our request for feedback on video calling last week. He writes, I love video calling. I think that the ability to see another person adds a touch of intimacy to the conversation. However, I have to be honest, I use it mostly for out-of-country calling. My mother and I have a close relationship, and when she moved to Maracaibo, is it Maracaibo, Venezuela? I had to come up with a way to communicate with her and see her now that we are so far apart. We use FaceTime, and it works wonderfully. There's no charge for the call. I get to see her and maintain communication with my mother. And so that's great. Thank you for writing in, Alfonso, about that, because we did put out the call. So, and honestly, this kind of mirrors my own experience. You know, like I don't use video calling to, let's say, call home to let them know I'm on my way home from work or whatever. Like that just seems like a pointless way to use that. But yes, absolutely. I don't have any family here. All of my family lives outside of the state for the most part. So if I want to, you know, see my parents, and if I want my kids to see my parents on a regular basis, that's the way you do it. And it's awesome. Like it feels like the future, you know?
Yeah. I don't use it on any regular basis, but my kids do a lot like that.
So how are they using it?
Well, just the same way we used to sit on the phone for hours and hours and hours, just FaceTime hours and hours and hours. And it's dangerous because like I'm walking around in my pajamas or I'm yelling at the kids or something. And it's like all of a sudden I look, I'm like, oh, you're FaceTiming this, aren't you? Oh, it's so embarrassing. You can't get away with anything. Like, you know, I'll just be saying something and, you know, my kids' friends are like, hi, Megan. It's tricky with kids. It really is because it's just like, you don't know what's going on in there.
Yeah. I could understand though. Like, you know, when you're younger and your life revolves around the friends that you've made, mm-hmm. and oh, also school when you have time for it. Just talking to someone on the phone, because I mean, when I was a kid, that's what I would do. I would mm-hmm. talk to my friends on the phone. But that's not the reality now. If I had the opportunity then to, air quotes, hang out with them, like in a visual sense, which is how I prefer to hang out with my friends when mm-hmm. you know, we're in the same room together, let's say, that if I had that option, I guess I would opt for it. It would just feel weird for me for video calls to be my default, to be my, oh, I need to call that person and tell them something, so I'm going to call them with my face.
Yeah.
Like, that's just not my go-to.
Well, kids these days, they don't like to call people with their ears and yeah. mouth. Like, that's just, yeah. they're like, oh, what, call what? Like, I'd rather text, and then if I'm going to, you know. Or, you know, it's like they'll play games with each other. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my boys definitely play Minecraft, you know, on a server with friends that are, you know, that's what they'll do for hours and hours. And sometimes they will FaceTime friends while they're playing Minecraft, you know.
Right.
Regular viewer Paul Smith wanted us to know about the 22 push-up challenge to honor those who serve and to raise awareness for veteran suicide prevention through education and empowerment. Now, this isn't really tech story, but except for the hashtag, I had not heard of this. I guess it's sort of like the ice bucket challenge. Mm-hmm. You should record a video of yourself doing push-ups, upload the video, add the hashtag, you know, the number of push-ups that you've done, and just to raise awareness of how many of our veterans we're losing every day to suicide. It's crushing and sad, and so any way we can get this more out in the open, have people think about it, and so thank you, Paul.
Yeah, it's the 22 push-up challenge because apparently the statistic is 22 suicides per day from those who've served in the military suffering from, you know, PTSD and all sorts of other conditions as a result. So right now they're shooting for, I think, 22 million push-ups because it all revolves around the number 22. Right now they're over 9 million push-ups. So we've got a table here.
Okay.
And
well, it already broke one.
That's true. I don't know how I feel about doing push-ups on a table, but, you know, I could do 22 push-ups at some point. I'll do that.
Do 4 push-ups.
Do that and then more.
Okay.
Okay.
That's
the beginning.
If you can do them on your knees, then I can do 12.
Okay.
I can do 22 push-ups on my knees. Oh,
okay. I think you could power
okay.
through it.
Okay.
You could power through it for this cause. So.
Well, if you've done it, if you want to do it, yeah, send us an email with your link, or we'll check the hashtag as well.
Yeah, there you go. Steve C. asks, have you guys discussed just how bad that anniversary update to Windows 10 really is? Leo mentioned it briefly on his radio show Saturday, but it's a lot worse than he thought. My PC keeps freezing all the time now. My Logitech webcam no longer works. I'm not sure what all is actually broken now because it's so hard to do anything. I'm just about to give up and switch to Linux. So I linked to a Thurrott article that's about the webcam issue specifically. The webcam issue stems from Windows allowing, with the new version, it basically allows more than one app to access the camera simultaneously. In previous versions, if one app had the camera, the webcam, another app couldn't get to it. Well, now it can do it thanks to something called a camera frame server that it relays the video through. Server supports only uncompressed video streams. So consumer webcams that encode with compressed formats, like the Logitech C920, which we recommend here at TWIB, will notice frozen video as a result when it tries to do it. Apparently, Microsoft's working on a patch. It might not be, available until September. There's a registry tweak that you can go in if you feel super confident in messing around with the registry to get around it for now. But that's just one issue. Apparently there are others with the update crashing computers, and Microsoft thinks that's tied to third-party software not running properly with the updates. So, you know, clean boot, you can eliminate the third-party software issues with a clean boot in safe mode, but I don't know if that's a long-term fix necessarily. You could roll back to an older version of Windows or wait for them to figure out the solution. But yeah, there you go. Windows 10 Anniversary Edition, not going so hot for everybody. But there are temporary workarounds, I guess. So you got that.
Mm-hmm.
So don't upgrade your Mac Pro or your MacBook Pro to Windows 10.
Okay. I was going to, but thanks, Steve. Now I'm not going to. I'll keep running.
Good warning. TNT's fan of the day is Paul Gannon on Twitter, who says he's watching The Last TNT from the Brick House on his Apple TV.
We looked so young then.
Oh, I remember those days. The salad years, as they call it, I think, like, for some
days.
Reason. Salad days. The salad years.
That's where the
well,
salad
you know, in conjunction with each other, they make up years. Exactly. Sure, that works. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your salad. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And we're going to find it. Oh, we will find it. Devices that build themselves. It's a crazy thought. And it's real. But first, before we talk about that, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron. They are the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system and, you know, setting the highest standards for ingredients, building a community of home chefs, making you better at cooking. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. And they are, in fact, delicious. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. When you're shopping at the grocery store, it's 60% more expensive than what you're going to get with Blue Apron. If you spend a lot eating out or at high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person for healthy, home-cooked meals. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences, and you can choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S., and Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. So you're getting really good produce, really good food. Meats, all that stuff. Seafood is sourced sustainably, beef is raised humanely, chickens are free range, pork is raised naturally, and regenerative farming practices are used for produce. By shipping the exact amount required for the recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste, and it actually kind of simplifies the recipe that you're doing because you know exactly what to put in at what time. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron brings you the best. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, it supports happy and healthy families. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and research shows the Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. New recipes are created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team, and they're not repeated within a year. So you've got spiced pork burgers with goat cheese and cucumber corn salad, summer vegetable and quinoa bowl with fairy tale eggplants, shishito peppers and corn. There's chicken tinga tacos with summer squash and tomato salsa. I'm pretty convinced that there is at least one person at Blue Apron that is just responsible for naming these meals and making you salivate when you read them. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. Check it out for yourself. Visit blueapron.com/twit, and we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
So Apple has the disassembling robot. He takes apart iPhones. Yawn. His name is Liam. Okay, fine. MIT just built a phone that could assemble itself. TechCrunch reports that MIT's self-assembly lab is developing materials and objects that can be programmed to self-construct. The lab, which is partly funded by DARPA, that's not scary at all, has created a true DIY cell phone designed to put its 6 separate parts together. This is amazing. The parts get shaken around in a tumbler. That's where the energy comes from. It's supposed to work the same way protein forms cells. So you can see that if you're watching the video.
They tumble, and then somewhere along the line, it takes a while, but somewhere along the line, they meet each other and they form a phone. It's very interesting. Like, it's very cool what they're doing here. I'm trying to understand. What does it satisfy?
What is the purpose? Like, why not just have a robot assemble?
Does it cut down on cost? So it's like, you know, we don't have to buy big robots to assemble these things. You don't pay for that as a consumer. We just send you the parts and you stir it around in a tub for 5 hours and then it puts itself together.
Exactly.
Very cool that you could do this.
Yes.
And
it makes sense. Like, you know those centrifugal force things at the carnival?
Yeah.
Like, if we weren't, you know, hooked in, that maybe would happen. We'd all, like, form one thing.
That's true. And we'd one giant person in the center.
Yeah, exactly.
And none of us would be alive because all we did is bounce around and run into each other the whole time.
That's the future, really. It's not about robots or anything like our privacy. It's just putting us all in the centrifugal force roller coaster. And
it's cool to look at. It just takes a while. Like they showed off flat pack furniture.
Yes.
It's kind of like
what happened here in the studio. We just put all the stuff, and then it's like we may have one set now.
Yeah, we brought in all the pieces from the brick house. Yeah. We just put them in the room and shook the room up, and they're finding their place. Like, this just kind of landed there.
Yep,
I don't know
exactly
how it happened. So they've been doing this with other things. I'm getting dizzy just looking at the video. I'm going to look down here. Theoretically, they can create a textile to make self-lacing sneakers a reality. Because it's all about like creating like programmable materials that have a memory of what happens to them. Like, I think they described it as when you cook bacon on a pan, it curls in a certain way, and that's because there's enough like layers of fat that it's conditioned to do that when you cook, and that fat condenses or cooks off or whatever. The proteins in the meat condense in a certain way that it's almost conditioned to curl in that specific way. So what if you could create fat, just taking the bacon as an example, and condition it to curl in a different way? For example, taking a textile that's conditioned to self-lace itself when an action is provided to it. Or flat pack furniture, you put it in water and shake it around, and that energy makes it construct. They showed that off with this tiny little chair. It's like 15 centimeters. And it took like hours to do to finally find its form and self-construct. But it literally was shaken around and put itself together into the form of a chair.
I'm glad that you explained the science through bacon. That helped me.
I think it helped me too, actually. It was like, I don't understand, but now I understand that I'm very, very hungry.
Everything can be explained through bacon.
Science
through
bacon.
That's what we've learned.
I think we have our title.
Mm-hmm.
all right, and that is it for this premiere episode at the Eastside Studio. And if you're an audio listener, that means nothing to you, but just know that we're still doing the show every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find the show on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to the show also. Even though we moved, it's the same place to subscribe, twit.tv/TNT. And if you were already subscribed, you don't need to change your subscription at all. It will still come to you even though we're in a different place. And you should come see us in our new place. Email tickets@twit.tv. Come see us. We have a lot of room for a studio audience, and we love to have you here. And tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to the Burnett brothers for all that they did today, and pretty much everybody else that works here at Twit, because everybody's been working day and night. Oh, the lights come on in the city. And you can see them back there. Everybody's just done such a great job getting the studio together just on such a quick turnaround. So thanks to everyone for all their hard work. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
Scary.